Hello and welcome to the Albion Roar live on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM and in front of this beautiful audience here at Brighton's Rialto Theatre. I'm Aidy Packham and he's Alan Wares, and we are burning your ears and melting these faces thanks to the magnificent support of Phil Shelley's oldfootballshirts.com. We've got two amazing guests for you this evening who have a wealth of experience both on the pitch and in the dugout. Firstly, a man who was signed by Brian Clough at the age of 19 in 1974 and who Clough described as my new Roy McFarland. He made his debut in 1974 in a win over Crystal Palace. And he went on to tease another 192 appearances.
That's
out of
terrible.
Him.
Absolutely
including
terrible.
39 in the 78-79 promotion season. He can now be seen knocking out a mean brew at the Chalet Cafe in Preston Park, where he's been for more than 30 years. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Andy Rawlings. Alongside Andy, we're also delighted to welcome a man who was a rock in defence. It's not going to get any better, trust me. Signed by Coventry by Peter Taylor in the heatwave summer of 1976, he was to be Taylor's last signing. He went on to make 114 appearances for the club before going on to open a seaside confection shop. However, that wasn't his last involvement in the club, and he joined the coaching staff in 1983 and was appointed manager in October of that year and was to stay in charge for 134 games and signed some of the biggest names in Albion's history. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my man to the right, Mr. Chris Catlin. Ladies and gentlemen, the panel. Right, you lot. Hello.
Hello. Well,
charming. Hello. Are you normally this rude to our guests?
Yeah, usually.
Okay.
Yeah. So tell me, what was your opinion of each other when you two first met?
Wow.
What, me and Raleigh?
You and Raleigh.
No, me and Kat.
I'll go back to the start when I was at Huddersfield in Coventry in a minute, but the first thing I knew about this club, and this team had got a chance of doing very well, was when I came down here, Peter Taylor resigned, went back to Cluffy, and he got an apartment in Campostilla. He buggered off back there and gave a cock and bull story about having art problems. It was nothing to do with art problems. Mullery came. Loads of enthusiasm, Alan, this, that and the other. The first day's training, we had to go from the Goldstone ground. What are you saying? The Goldstone ground, is that better?
Yeah,
The Goldstone ground to Waterroll. So I'm going up and we set off about 9 o'clock and I'm running like anything, slipped head over arse twice on going up the wooden cops. Gets to the other end, we're down the other side and I got in next to the last. And Maury said to me, he says, Kat, I've played it for you at Coventry for 10 years. That's not a very good attitude. I said, what are you talking about? I says, I don't know. I says, I'm running like hell I was. And I said, I'm next to the last. I apologise. I'm sorry. I'll do better tomorrow. And I went back in the dressing room after the game. And I thought, how the bloody hell have I done this? And all these buggers were going up Woodland Drive, thumbing lifts. and they're all getting in bloody cars. And who did I see? Mike Bamber, the chairman, giving Sully a lift to the bloody thing. And I thought, Jesus Christ. I thought to myself, hang on a minute. I says, there's a lot of whirlwithel about this club, a whirlwithel about the players. And I thought, you know, they've got a chance. And Peter Taylor told me the players he had at the club, with me and Crossy coming as well, and the players we already have in here, with a bit of enthusiasm, you could have put Dora Bryan in charge and would have still gone up. There's no question. That team was full of absolute quality. I saw Andy Rawlings. He played alongside me and Graham Cross, and we talked him and talked him and talked him. Without any question, Andy Rawlings was the best centre-half in that league at that time. Absolutely no question. I said that unreservedly, and I know a bit about football, me, believe it or not. I do know a bit about football. No. He's a good player, Raleigh. And on top of that, a good character.
Kat, you should have been my agent.
Shut up,
you should have been my agent, mate. I'll tell you what, that's what I got.
No, he's outstanding for a couple of seasons at the centre half, Andy Rawlings. Great left foot, good header of a ball.
And good right fist.
On top of... Oh, shut up a minute. On top of on top of that, he's a good apple as well. Raw is a top guy. He's a top guy.
Rollo, same question to you. What was your opinion of him?
Well, look, for me, it all started back in 74, as you say, with the Cluffy signing. And I've got so many stories. I don't know if we've got time to tell a few. I'm sure we'd love to hear him. Look, I was at Norwich as a kid, 15 years old, apprenticeship for 3 years. Obviously, you know, come from a little sort of outbacks in the side of Bristol, you know, very rural.
Portishead.
Yeah,
not to be confused with a band of the same name.
There we go.
Although you were in that band.
I guess apparently. A lot. Well, it might have been, yeah.
Wikipedia's a beautiful
thing. Couldn't sing, but I could take off my shoes and hum anyway. But that's apart from that. But sorry, that was quite subtle, guys. That's all right, mate. Sorry. No, sorry. But anyway, yeah. So there I was, like, you know, obviously having a chance to hopefully become a professional footballer and went to Norwich. Great start for me, you know, without going on too much. It was... Leaving a little village to go to a city was quite daunting, but the city of Norwich had a village mentality then, and it was great, honestly. It was just, you know, we had to live in the YMCA for a couple of years. That was my first 2 years in Norwich, you know. I guess, I don't know what the guys do now. They probably put up in five-star hotels by their own first place at 16 or whatever. They can afford £1 million badge. That's the way the game's changed. I haven't got any problems with that at all. But so there I was in the YMCA for a couple of years. Had a year after that in Diggs with Mrs. Smith, bless her. She's not around now, but lovely, lovely lady. But yeah, just cutting back to where I was with the Norwich thing. I had 3 years as an apprentice. Unfortunately, Ron Saunders gave me the nod and allowed me to obviously have the pleasure of playing professional football. So that was an incredible thing for me. And then within the following season, I had Brian Clough coming to Norwich who wanted to sign me, which was really? Just... It was amazing.
How did that come about then, Rollo?
Well, I think, you know, the partnership of Taylor and Clough, we all know about, you know, for me, the best partnership going at that time. I mean, they won so much, achieved so much, you know. Obviously, Cloughy was the motivator, was the coach. Taylor was the number two. Great at finding players, you know, and choosing players. And obviously, I've got to say that because obviously he came in and wanted to sign me. But, but you know, obviously there we were. I'll tell you a little story. We'll just, you know, we'll go on. I was at Norwich. I just signed pro. So it was the first time that I hadn't had to clean the terraces, sweep the terraces, clean the boots, do all the menial jobs around the ground. I was in a snooker club in Norwich. Having a game of snooker for an hour, because I had the afternoons off then after training in the morning, absolute luxury. So got a phone call from behind the bar, which was in the snooker club. No mobiles then, guys. You know, it was just the lady just said, is there an Andy Rawlings in the lounge? So I've gone over to the bar, and basically it was a club secretary who phoned him up and said, you need to come to the ground now. We want you here. You have to come. So I went out, jumped on the bus, went to the, yeah, exactly, guys, yeah. Didn't get in my Bentley or my Ferrari, you know what I mean? Jumped on the bus.
Jumped on your own bus?
Jumped on my own bus, yeah. Well, actually, you could go down the bus lanes then, like, you know what I mean? It just saves you a bit of time, like, you know what I mean? But yeah, so I went to the ground and I was there. Spider Mella and another young lad, you probably remember his name, Steve Govia, who was a couple of years older than me, were still at the stadium. And I just said, what's going on? What's happening? He said, we've got Brian Clough here. He wants to sign all three of us as a package. So really took me aback because I'd literally just signed pro. I played three or four games in the first team, played against West Ham and Leeds and stuff. So I was quite pleased with the way I was progressing. We just changed managers. John Bond had taken over from Ron Saunders. So
you didn't get on with John Bond, did you, though?
John was different. Like,
didn't,
you know,
he say he'd never play for the first team again?
Well, it wasn't so much you wouldn't, because I was a young lad trying to break in the team. I played my four games, and basically, it was, look, I don't want you to go, but obviously, I'd like you to stay and become part of the squad. But I can't guarantee you're going to play this season. I said, okay, that's fine. So I'm going to go and talk with Cluffy. So I walked in the office, and there he was. You'll probably visualise this. John Bond's desk, glass of whiskey on the side. There we go, like, you know. Can I borrow that, Aid? Is that all right? As I walked through the door, he went, son, sign that. It'd be the best thing you've ever done. And that was the opening line for our talk, transfer talks, you know what I mean? And
was it?
It was the best thing I've ever done, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, at the time, it took me aback because, as I say, I had no intentions of leaving the club, but... I guess if you've got Brian Clough in there saying to you, like you've just said, you're going to be my next Roy McFarland. We want to build a team around you. I've got some. We're going to sign a whole new team. You know, this club is going places. Obviously, he took me aback. I had to have the proverbial walk around Carrow Road with Peter Taylor telling me all about what the club's going to do, how it's what's going to happen, the progress it's going to make, the players they're signing, and. I guess within that, I can remember getting back anyway, and I just said to him, well, look, boss, look, Brian, Mr. Clough, whatever I called him. I said, look, sir probably, you know, in all. I said, look, I normally talk to my dad, you know, like, because obviously, you know, being a young lad, 19. He said, son, he said, you're a man now. You've got to make your own decisions. And basically, that was it. So within about 10 minutes, I signed the contract. I had no clue what he was going to pay me, guys. So that was it.
The rest, as they say, is history.
That's why I'm here now, yeah. So there we go.
Now, Kat, you were born in Milne Row in 1946. And
at least do that in an Eamon Andrews voice.
You were
at school, you were an all-rounder. You could have gone to play professional cricket or professional rugby, apparently.
No, I come from a very sporting family. My dad was a professional rugby player, played for England. His two brothers were professional rugby players. And they were hoping I was going to be a professional rugby player as well. But there's no money in professional rugby. And so I started to play football on the moors between Lancashire and Yorkshire. You know, the provisional thing with, you know, a dog and 10 pitches and this, that and the other. And it was a hell of a situation where I was playing on this one minute and then a bloke knocked at the door called Hooper. He used to be a left winger with West Ham. And he said, we'd like you, your lad to come over to Huddersfield and have a trial. My dad was excited about it because he used to play for Huddersfield at rugby and he could see the only father and son, one played professional rugby for Huddersfield and one played professional football at Huddersfield Town. So I went over there for a trial and I don't know what I'm thinking. And then I saw Frank Worthington and Trevor Cherry. I don't know if you remember these names. Mm. You know, absolutely fantastic players. Like.
We'll be talking about Frank Worthington later, trust me.
No. Special players, special people as well. So I went over there and eventually I signed this. They got rid of Bob McNabb to Arsenal. I said got rid of it. Bob was a very good player. Bob McNabb went to Arsenal. I was 12 months at Huddersfield possibly. And then both Coventry and Chelsea bid £70,000 for me, which was 50 years ago, was an enormous amount of money. And I went down to Ifia Road and I felt I was going to Mars coming from the Pennines going to Coventry. I couldn't believe it. I went down there. I saw Reg, the doorman at the time, and I said, have you got a cup of tea? I said, I've been coming down. I have two buses and a train here. I had a cup of tea with Reg outside. I said, who's the manager? No, Campbell. I said, what sort of club is this? He says, it's a great club, Coventry. I said, Derek Robbins is in charge, this, that and the other, blah, blah, blah. Went and seen Noel Campbell. I says, what's all these cameras doing here? It's company for me, a full-back, surely not. No, he says, Ernie Hunt's signing the same day, but we're playing Manchester United tomorrow. And Manchester United. So I went and seen Noel and I chatted him about what his intentions was for the club, about getting European football, which he inevitably did as well. And I said, what sort of money would you be paying me? What's your highest players on? And he said, £65 a week. And I've always been a brain surgeon. So I said, what would be I on? And he said, £65 a week. And I said, if I sign for you today, Noel, will I be playing tomorrow? He said, yeah, you're the biggest signing we've ever made in our history. And I thought, I took a back seat and I thought, if I can play on the same pitch as George Best, Bobby Charlton, Dennis Law, Nobby Styles and all these fantastic players, I can die on Sunday morning.
Because you actually had the
choice. No, that's what I actually meant. I couldn't believe I'd come from the moors playing with the dog and 10 pitches to be on the same pitch. And then I played in the game and I got man of the match, actually, which was a fluke.
It's a game you won, isn't it?
No. They give me the man of the match award for putting George Best in my top pocket. I think they've come back from Gornick and Poland. I don't know where George had been since he come back from Gornick, but I did all right. Not too bad. This is a lovely story. You like this one, though. After the game, we're going back to the back up north, and my brother was a plumber, and I just signed for 70,000, put George Best in his place, sort of, and I'm sat on a toilet seat in the front seat in my brother's plumbing van, and I'm going up there. Oh, hang on, I missed a bit. I missed a bit. Here. I missed a bit here.
I
On the Friday, hang on, quiet. On the Friday, I had no boots. My dad come down to give me my boots, and he says, shape yourself. So my dad's at the game as well. Going to the toilets, going home, and then all of a sudden, I says, my dad piped up from the back. He said, bloody great day. Really enjoyed it. I said, yeah, it was a great day. A great result, wasn't it, Dad? He said, I'm not talking about that. I said, what are you talking about then? He says, you know when the Manchester United team went to the ground, Ifield Road, it was in them days, and the Coventry team, you got on the coach to go to the game. He says, and I was really content because I brought these boots down from Huddersfield, feeling pleased for myself. And all of a sudden, I thought, where the bloody hell is this Ifield Road? How am I going to get there? And at that moment, Sir Matt Busby, the great Sir Matt Busby and Louis Edwards Sr. came over and he said, are you Mr. Catlin? He says, I am. He says, would you like a lift to the ground? And my dad, he had a nurse, like somebody who died with black things on the thing. And it gave me a dad. I hadn't signed for Manchester United. I signed for Coventry City. And he gave my dad a lift to the ground at Ifield Road in the back of the thing. He never forgot it to the day he died. Oh, that's quality. Mm. Quality. Mm. 100% quality. That's why Sir Matt Busby is Sir Matt Busby and always will be Sir Matt Busby. Mm. Different class. Then I had a couple of seasons there, and then sort of I noticed on my contract, I've got to get these out because I'll forget them otherwise. I got 500 quid if we come in the top 10 in the first division, or the premiership it was, in the first division in them days. And Ernie Hunt, our top striker, great character, wasn't he? We'd sign him from Everton. You remember the donkey kick? Mm. Do you remember all that? Willie Carr flicked, Ernie banged it past Gordon West. You remember all that? Well, he's a bit of a bloody sod. He was knocking this barman off in the village. She had these big leather boots up here. Very fetching leather boots she had. And he was knocking her off. And I thought, we played Newcastle at home. Listen to this. We're playing Newcastle at home. And I think it was 9th or 10th or something. And I thought, if we win this game, I'm going to get 500. 500 quid is a lot of money. So I said to Hunty, I said, listen, knock it on the head for the last couple of days. I says, we need to beat Newcastle Saturday and explain my contractual thing. And so Noel Campbell's giving the team talk before the game in the Hotel Leofric. And he suddenly stopped Noel. He says, where's Hunty? And I says, I think it's that he had that chicken for dinner, but I was trying to cover up for him. But, and I seen the bastard coming down the stairs from the Hotel Leofric. I thought, 1:30 on Saturday afternoon, he's up there with a bird in the Leofric. So he comes down, we're getting changed in the dressing room. It's a true story. He comes down in the dressing room, and I said, Auntie, you bastard. I said, I told you, 500 quid. And I tell you what, after a quarter of an hour in the game, Coventry 2, Newcastle 0, on both goals. So the bastard has scored an hat-trick. He got one in the Hotel Leofric and two on the pitch. In a 2 hours span, he got a bloody hat-trick, hadn't he?
That's because he put the wrong underwear on.
And he died 8 weeks ago, unfortunately. I did his eulogy in Gloucester. What a character he was. Hmm. Do you want me to go on or shut up?
Yeah. No.
I've got some more.
All I'm just thinking here is I intended to put this show out on the radio. I've got no chance now.
That's good.
Yeah, don't swear, I said to Kat before we started this.
I'm going to throw a little bit more in. Okay. I'll bore you even more, right?
I give up.
After, it was surreal. I was playing against Ian St. John, Jimmy Greaves, Alan Ball, Colin Harvey, Howard Kendall, all these fantastic players. And I had to pinch myself. I was on the same pitch as these wonderfully talented players. Don't get me going about Progba and all these. Don't get me going about all these so-called two bobbers today. Them players, Alan Ball and Howard Kendall and Colin Harvey and Ian St. John and all the great players, Ian Callan and Peter Thompson, Harry Redknapp, Jeff Hurst, John Sissons. You can go through them. Every team, even us, luckily I played behind Tommy Hutchings for 10 years at Coventry. Wonderful player. We'll come to Peter O'Sullivan in a minute because I played behind Peter O'Sullivan at Brighton as well. What a fantastic player he was as well. Mm. Underrated player. Anyway, we got into Europe. Then I'm on the same pitch all of a sudden as Franz Beckenbauer, Gerd Müller, Sepp Maier, and all these wonderful players. Wonderful, wonderful players. And it was great. Then the following year, we went to Bangkok in front of 100,000 people and we played Santos of Brazil. And who am I on the same pitch as Pelé, Edu, and all these players. And, it, you know, I've had absolutely fantastic. We'll come to Brighton in a minute. Now, I arrived down here in a minute, but I wanted to get that Coventry bit out of my system to say what a wonderful 10 years he had there, playing against wonderful players with wonderful people, and it, as it was at Brighton as well.
Hello, Rollo.
Heidi, yeah, good. You still here? I'm just nodded off a couple of times.
Rollo, you
sorry,
may...
sorry, did Kat actually draw breath there?
No.
I was just thinking, if he played with Harry Redknapp, he could be in the jungle next year.
Yeah, I think you might, yeah.
Rollo...
we're not done yet.
You made your Albion debut on the 14th of August 1974 against that burning smell from up the road in front of a Goldstone crowd of 26,235. We won 1-0. Can you remember who scored that game?
Spider.
It was.
Spider, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you...
So, hang on, so that does that mean that it was his debut as well?
Yes, it would have been.
Yeah, because if he signed with you during the close season.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm sure Steve Govia played alongside me as well. Yeah.
And this is all under Taylor by this time.
This was Taylor, yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.
So you were signed by Brian Clough, and you didn't actually play for Cloughy that season, but you obviously in and around and seeing the drama that unfolded with that. So, I mean, how was that for the players seeing... I mean, because Clough wasn't there for training most days, was he?
To be honest, I had 2 weeks under Cloughy. I mean, Cloughy was there the previous season, you know, and people like, bless his heart, Steve Piper would have been playing at that time. And I spoke to Steve about it. And Cloughy obviously was the manager, but he did like to shoot off and watch a bit of boxing in America, watch, you know, Clay and that part. So he wasn't there all the time, and Pipes documented that. But unfortunately, he signed me. We did the bit at the dressing room. We had a week's tour in Mallorca. It was an end of season tour, and I'll just step back a bit. When we signed from Norwich, the three of us all signed together, as I said, and we were all then were told we had to go and watch Brighton play Bristol Rovers, the last game of the season away. Do you remember the game at home when we got beat 8-2? I didn't know about that because obviously I was playing for Norwich at the time. It wasn't in my head. But obviously when we got down to Eastville at the stadium, obviously the supporters there were letting Cluffy know exactly what had happened at the home game, like, you know. He obviously took it on the chin. We watched the game and, as you say, people like Norman Gore would have been playing, John Templeman, Brian Powdy would have been in goal. And to be fair, the boys, you know, put up a decent performance. It was 1-1, you know, which... having said getting beaten 8-2 at home at the Goldstone was obviously a thrashing, so 1-1 wasn't so bad. I just remember the bit at the end when Spider, because he was the senior pro, he played at Man City, he was like mid-20s, and he was the main, I think the package was 40 grand, I think if I remember, Spider was something like 36, Govey was 3 and I was a grand, you know what I mean? So quite a lot of money in those days, guys, you know what I mean? But anyway, just to cut a long story short, Spider stood up and just said to Cluffy, he said, right, boss, the game had been over. He said, are we going to go and meet the players? And he went, no point meeting them, son. He said, they won't be here next season.
But
and true to his word, the 2 weeks that I had with Cluffy, we had this, we the week later, we went over to Mallorca for this end of season tour. We had to play a couple of games against a couple of teams. And basically, there was about four of the players that were in that last team that were there on the tour. A whole new load of players were obviously around, yeah.
But you mentioned about, I mean, this is something that I think was unfortunately overlooked by the club recently, but you mentioned Steve Piper. Tell us about Steve.
Oh, Steve. Steve was just, I mean, obviously he was at the club when I came. So obviously, you know, local lad, which obviously we've got one now, Lewis Dunker's obviously like, you know, turned into an incredible like prospect. He's playing for England. It's fantastic. Steve was obviously a local lad with Tony Towner at the time. And Steve was such a genuine player. Always gave everything for the club. How could you describe him? I mean, probably if you had to mark him every game, he'd be a 7 or 8 out of 10. He was always so consistent. You know, obviously played at the back when I came, when I saw him play at Bristol Rovers, he was playing with Norman Gall. But obviously when myself and Steve Govia turned up, we started the season. But he forced his way back in. And as you all know, you know, well documented, the season... We had 2 years under Taylor, which obviously was a building thing, you know. We didn't obviously do well the first season. The second season, I think we might have finished fourth or fifth, just missed out. And that's when obviously Mullers turned up to obviously take the team forward and push it on. But that first season under Mullers, I mean, Pipes, was given a new role. They actually took him obviously out of the back four, put him into like a defensive midfield role. And if I remember rightly, I think he played every game that season. And he was absolutely brilliant. And it just shows you how versatile he was as a footballer, as a player, you know. And, you know, for me, having had the privilege to know him, just such an incredible, genuine guy. He gave everything to this club. And I can't remember the words, but I remember Cloughy even wrote something about him in saying basically, you know, that his attitude, you know, was just incredible. And obviously the club meant everything to him. And I think out of the group of players that were there that season before he got rid of them, Steve was obviously a certainty to stay because he gave everything he had for the club and more. So,
For those who haven't read Spencer Vignes's new book, Bloody Southerners, about Clough and Taylor, and this isn't necessarily a spoiler, and it is an excellent book, and if you haven't got it, I do recommend that you buy it for Christmas or drop a hint to your loved ones to get them to buy it for Christmas because it's superb. There is a lovely story in there about at one time that Steve was a naughty boy, wasn't it? He climbed over a wall at the Goldstone. Go on.
Well, it's only what I've heard, obviously.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I think there were two or three lads, and probably a few of us guys know Frankie Fraser as well. I'm sure. Hands up, yeah. Frank was an apprentice at the time, and I think Frank was part of the little group. I'm not sure, it was three of them that actually did decide that they wanted to have a kick around on the Goldstone, you know, but it happened to be about 10 o'clock at night after a few beers. And so basically they did climb over the wall. They got found out. They got arrested by the police. I think that was the case. And obviously, reprimanded after that. But obviously, you know, for Steve to come out of that and obviously carry on playing for the club, it just showed you obviously that it was just obviously a couple of beers, Kat. Yeah. We've all been there and done it, haven't we?
But Steve Piper, a genuinely underrated Brighton hero.
Absolutely.
Very much so, absolutely. I mean, I can't say any more than that. An absolute tragedy that he's gone so early. Sure. You know what I mean? Sure.
Okay. Now, Rollo, you previously described Peter Taylor as perhaps not being the greatest manager, particularly management skills, but he certainly laid the foundations of the success that was to come.
Yeah, obviously, as you say, you know, I mean, you know, going back to the Cloughy story, you know, I'll give you the Bristol Rovers, but we had that week in Mallorca. We played a couple of games, and there's a couple of little stories to go with that, guys, if you want to listen, and I'm sure you do. We were out there. All the directors and Cloughy were staying in the 5-star hotel at the top of the beach. We were in the 3-star with Glenn Wilson chaperoning us or looking after us down, you know, which I guess is probably... What more could go wrong, yeah. So we got called up to Cloughy's hotel on the Monday. We got there just to obviously give us a little rundown of how the week was going to go with the games and stuff like that. And I can remember we were sat. The club, he was on a sunbed. I don't know if he'd been playing squash or had a swim or something like that, but he had his shorts on. He's all laid back, you know. Glenn Wilson, I mean, obviously everybody knows Glenn. He was obviously like assistant coach, whatever role he played. He had so many roles at that club. Physio, coach, you name it.
Groundsman.
You know, groundsman. Yeah, you name it. He's done it. But anyway, Cloughy's there, obviously reeling off, obviously, what was going to happen that week in terms of playing times and stuff like that. Glenn came back from a little trip into the town where he'd been to the bank, and he had this bag with him. So he put the bag down next to Cloughy's sunbed and said, "There you go, boss." So Cloughy put his hand in this bag, pulled out a big wad of pesetas, put them in his bag, and he went, "Right, share the rest out amongst the boys." So, boys, you know, I mean, that's obviously, you know, part of Cloughy's DNA, you know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, obviously, we had that 2 weeks there, and that was obviously the end of my time with Brighton. It was really disappointing because the reason why I signed for Brighton was obviously to play under Brian Clough. And as you say, you know, that was obviously the pull for me. But
Tate, you know, brought something to the table, didn't they?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I mean, obviously, Pete took over, got, you know, stepped into the shoes.
Sorry, can I interrupt you there? It's not shoes, is it? It was carpet slippers, I believe.
Well, I think they were shoes because I remember Kenny Tyler. So, you know, do you remember, Kat? look, this is waffling on, but I'm going to diverse. We used to have these meetings every Friday, like up in the boardroom, and we'd get called up, and you'd have like an hour or so with Pete. He'd be sat at the front, like talking. You'd be the players, we'd be the manager. He had his little dog Bess at his feet. And he'd go through all sorts of stuff, you know. We talk about, like, the American Depression and all this. And we're all sat there, like, thinking, oh, my God, like, get me out of here. You know, what's going on? Like, can we go over Bacon Sarnie over Wags Kafka, you know what I mean? But I just remember the one day, Kenny Tyler. You remember Kenny Tyler, yeah, the fullback from Sheffield? Mm. Well, Ken was sat in the back row. Pete Taylor had an apartment on the seafront. And obviously, so he was there a lot. Ken must have been walking along the seafront, and he suddenly decided he wanted a little bit of confrontation, a little bit of conflict. So it is. And you, Tyler, he said, like, I can remember you walking along the seafront. You got your shirt undone. He said, call yourself a professional footballer. He said, like, oh my God. He said, you need to sort yourself out. And he went on for about 3 or 4 minutes. And I knew Ken was going to react, like, you know, because obviously being that Sheffield, didn't he?
From the north, yeah.
From the north, yeah. Exactly. Stand up. And then, so Peter finished and he went on to say something to someone else. And he went, hey, hold on a minute, he said. You've had that same pair of shoes on, he said, for the last fucking 6 months, he said. So don't start talking to me, he said, about clothes and what I'm wearing. And Pete's reaction was, that's what I want. That's exactly what I want. That's it. We need that little bit of fight, that little bit of sea, you know. And it was an absolute classic, like.
Brilliant.
It. But so that's just a little bit of analogy. Of
great action to being owned.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but that team that Taylor put together, though, the likes of Brian Hall, Peter Ward, some bloke called Catlin.
Never heard of him.
I mean, he laid the foundations for what Mullery was to take up to the top flight.
So, can I interject here?
Of course.
Yeah. Listen,
we would
expect no
different.
Let me tell you something. Peter Taylor was one shrewd nut. He knew a player. He knew what was wanted and wanted required. He knew the mixture of experience, youth, enthusiasm. He knew everything. I think you were just about to spit out a minute ago that Taylor didn't do much or whatever. Let me tell you, Taylor was spot on. He knew about people in life. No matter what, whether you're running a restaurant, a football club, no matter what you're doing in life, you've got to assess your chef, the staff, the floor staff, the players, everything. Taylor was well shrewd at that. I unfortunately didn't play under him, but I signed under him, and I spent 3 days before I signed down here telling me what he was going to do with this football club. And if he had remained, he would have done it, but Cluffy got him back. But very intelligent man as regard to football and life.
But history, I think, but sorry, can I just say something? I think in terms of putting a football team together, I mean, you can't really, as you say, you know, he was incredible. And as Chris just said, you know, the team that Mullers took over was Peter Taylor's team. Mm. And also the thing you've got to remember is when I first come to the club within that first season, you think of the players that we had here. You guys remember the name. We had Phil Beale. We had Joe Kinnear. Mm. We had Neil Martin. Mm. We had Ernie Machin. You know, players that had played it, like this fella, played at top level, all right? They were probably the other side of 30, you know, and obviously...
Careful.
Yeah, you were 29 when you come, Kurt.
It's not a good word about me.
I know, yeah. But you know, and that's obviously, I know, you know, for a lot of players of that generation, it was the last hurrah. Obviously, they come down to a club, they drop down from the top division, they probably got a few quid for coming. But, you know, in terms of getting players to the club, that was Peter Taylor's dream. And for me, you know, imagine turning up at 19... And you're being, you know, you're actually training with those players who played at top level. It was just,
and that's
like,
why
like,
Taylor knew that. He knew it would have an effect on the younger players. Yeah. Having Phil Beale and Joe Kinnear, Graham Cross, me, and a few others around the dressing room makes a big difference, yeah, and it inspires people as well. Yeah. And that's where Taylor stepped in and knew how to collaborate a team.
Well, history says that Clough really was nothing without Taylor.
Brian Clough, don't kid yourself. There was a double like Markham and Wise here. I'll tell you, Clough was brilliant. I'll come on to Clough in a minute when I'm going to tell you how I signed Danny Wilson. And I don't know where we're going with this, but Clough and Taylor was, you know, you don't get combinations in any walk of life, as in football in particular, as good as them two. The Rickle and Mickle. You know, Bill and Ben, they bounced it. They knew exactly what the other one was thinking. If he said one thing, he'd do another thing. But it worked. Underestimate either of them. They was brilliant. I remember stripping alongside a big lump of lard called Larry Lloyd at Coventry. Now, I haven't a bloody clue. A flat-footed. He was a mate of mine. Lovely wife. We used to go out for meals on a Saturday night. Absolutely bloody useless he was. He was just a shade better than me. And we used to go out on Saturday night, and then suddenly went and seen Brian Clough, took him off Gordon Milne at Coventry, went over there, and he married him with Kenny Burns and stuck Shilton behind him. And he says, "You're the best centre-half in Europe, Lloyd." And when he said it, you kind of believed. I mean, look at the players, John McGovern, John Eure and all these. They were average, weren't they? But he made them feel 12 foot tall. He made everybody feel really, really special, Cluffy. Taylor ain't got that, but Taylor had the other bit. And the mixture was, tremendous. And it's a pity they didn't stay longer in Brighton.
Indeed. Okay, well, this is, of course, the Albion Roar, and it wouldn't be the Albion Roar without a Shirt of the Week. So please welcome Phil Shelley.
Hooray!
Hello
there. Hey!
Now,
it's not the Albion Roar without a pratfall.
You told me there was only going to be 20 people here.
Now, obviously, the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, we need a sponsor to keep the show going, and Phil is very benevolent in that. And he gives us a Shirt of the Week every week, normally a script for me to fall over.
And nobody gets to see it till afterwards, but here we go.
Here we go. So what?
Flat 50-year-old bloke in a replica shirt.
Give us a twirl, love. Give us a twirl. Wow. Goodness me. And you've got, is that a massive sticking plaster over your tip?
It is indeed.
Okay, so we normally do on the radio, we're going to describe it. And Kat, fire away, mate.
Not the best. 4 out of 10.
No, we're talking about the shirt, not the model.
No, I am as well. 4.
It's the biggest one I could find.
4 out of 10 maximum.
Okay, we're looking at a dark grey shirt with
it looks like
pink
a goalkeeper
sleeves,
shirt.
And it does look like a keeper's shirt. It says,
looks like Coventry's
Invicta France, so I'm going to guess it's a French side. Puel à bois. Something to do with wood, which you won't actually normally associate with Phil. Can't see what the badge is, so I'm going to guess here, AD, that it's a French team.
I think I can do French.
No. You okay. Struggle with English, mate.
This is true. Okay, so this is the first shirt for the show. This is the 2010 to 2011 away shirt of French Ligue 2 side Racing Club de Lens. They were formed in 1906 and the nickname Sang et Or, which translated means blood and gold.
I tell you what, you are fluent, Aid, honestly. Right? Seriously.
Just not in French.
They play at the Stade Bollier de la Lille, which has a capacity of 38,223, which is actually about 7,000 more than the population of the city of Lens. The stadium has hosted European Championship matches, World Cup matches, and Rugby World Cup matches. Former striker Stefan Dembicki holds the world record for most goals scored in a single match when he scored 16 times in a 32-0 win against Aubry Auster in the French Cup in 1943.
You've made that up, haven't you?
Every single fact is checked and double-checked and embellished. but that one's true. It's still a Guinness World Record.
Marc Vivien Foe played for Lens between 1994 and 1999, making 88 league appearances, scoring 11 times. Since his untimely passing in 2003, aged just 28, his number 17 shirt has been permanently retired as a mark of respect. Nicky Mayempa was on the books at Lens between 2003 and 2006, the same time that Anthony Knockhart was in the under 21 squad.
There you go. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Phil Shelley. And if you go to, if you're interested in this sort of thing, Phil hosts a football shirt site, oldfootballshirts.com, where people take pictures of their football shirts, stick them up on the website, and there are 96,000 different types of shirt. This is how tragic the people across the world really are. Because it's in what, 7 languages now? 9 languages, including plus 80s.
None that
80 speaks.
Not even English.
Not even English.
80-ish is a brilliant
yes,
language.
So it won't be long to the 100,000. But if you want to just sort of like spend a waste of an afternoon going through old football shirts because, you know, you're that much of an anorak, if you excuse me, mixing my clothing metaphors, then, just sort of head on to there, oldfootballshirts.com. And I'd say, as AD said, Phil has actually kindly sponsored the show for many, many years, and we do appreciate his support. Thanks, Phil.
When Phil was coming up there, Kat just whispered to me about the Coventry Brown away kit, which is a wonder. Now, did you wear that?
No, I didn't. I'd gone by then, but I'd gone for a long time actually. But that was the worst strip of all, wasn't it? The Coventry away strip, Brown, wasn't it? Did you ever watch him? Oh, Jesus Christ! Actually, the Brighton away strip now is not great, is it? It's not great. You don't run out and you think, Christ, we're up against it today, do you? No, what's that about?
I kind of thinking that when you had...
No, not happy.
All right.
No, it's not, no. Well, you've got to say it, haven't you?
All right. I think you said it several times.
There's nothing done about it otherwise.
All right, there's nothing I'll do about it now, Chris.
No. What?
Is that the green one or the yellow one?
All of them. They run out and, you know, you run out. You could have all these colours and strips and... You know, but when you do pre-season, when you're determining what your waist strip is, you've got this selection of everything.
I used to have a red and black one.
Is that Dick?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dick Knight. Oh, yeah.
No, it reminds me of the national anthem. You know, a national anthem. God save... You know, Billy... And then the other thing. When Brighton come out, the opposition come out, they're all like this and white and red and this, that and the other. And Brighton come out in that bloody shaggy green.
I think, Jesus Christ.
Next week on the close show.
You're 1-0 down in the kicking.
I tell you what, Kat.
No, you are, aren't you?
Shane Duffy's happy to play in the green.
No, he is, yeah. When he plays.
When he plays, yeah. All right.
Okay, when Kat. Kat, look, back on topic.
Can we head back to the 70s now, please?
Yes. What do we want?
Tell us about how you came to Brighton.
Good question. good answer, yeah.
It was the Man United bus.
I had a chance to sign for Brighton of Albion, a Vancouver Whitecaps in Canada. My old goalkeeping coach at Coventry, Tony Waiters, I don't really remember this far back, ex-England goalkeeper, wanted to go to Vancouver. But my wife said to me about 6 months before, and she's obviously seen how downhill I was going, she says, when you retire, can we go to Brighton? And do you know, I played against about 88 football league clubs in the thing. I'd never been to Brighton. I said, why Brighton? She says, my dad's a publican, and he used to go to Licensed Victuallers do down here at the Metropole. And I said, OK, I'll bear that in mind. No, hang on. Anyway, Brighton came in, Peter Taylor phoned me up, will I come down? I came down and spoke to Peter for 2 or 3 days, I think it was, going backwards and forwards of what his ambitions was for the club. And I was really impressed by him and really impressed by his apartment, which I eventually bought off him. No, even more apparent, you know.
Was that part of the contract?
No, but I'll tell you, and I've never regretted to this day. I think we're very fortunate, everybody in this room tonight, to live in Brighton and Hove. It's a fantastic place to live. If you've got to live anywhere in England, there's no better place to live than Brighton. And the football, it's superb. It is absolutely superb. You know, we've got Gatwick, we've got this. Unfortunately, the council seems to cock things up here and there, big time. But it's a lovely, lovely place to live. Beautiful place. And then... I came down here and I signed for Peter Taylor, and then he buggered off, met Brian in Campostilla, and in rode into the town come Alan with his all enthusiasm, and he was terrific enthusiasm and did very, very well and took us up. But I honestly believe, like I said earlier on, you could have put Dora Bryan in charge. The squad was that good that Taylor put together, we'd have gone up. I'm not taking anything against Alan, mind you. Alan's been superb for this football club. But we'd have gone up anyhow because we had such quite... As Harry Redknapp says, and I say, and people don't understand, I'll explain it tonight. If you've got good players, you're a good manager. Not necessarily so, but that you're perceived as a good manager. If you've got bad players, eventually you get sacked. And that's the name of football.
Okay. So what were your first impressions of Alan when he turned up?
Oh, well, I played against him for 10 years, Tottenham and Coventry. I knew all of him. Brilliant footballer. Absolutely brilliant. The old Tottenham team was great. Very strong, great passer of a ball. England international. Great for Brighton to follow Clough and Taylor and all them. And he was... Bamba was so shrewd. That's another one I've got. Utmost admiration for Mike Bamba. Absolutely. You know, he got the old... Me and Rolly were discussing this. We used to buy the lunchtime Argus, the 3:30 Argus, and the evening Argus. He was so, there was something going on all the time. He was doing this, doing that, doing that. And what I liked about him as well, he involved everybody. The tea lady. I used to go down to my office sometimes to see him when I was manager and have Fred, the Argus man, in his office having a cup of tea. Very, very important. Everybody counted with Mike. There was no Billy Big Times. And he got this club going. He really got it going. At the end, there was a cock-up because the lad who had all the money in, apparently, went into the water at Shoreham Harbour, Mr. Wickendine. And then his wife wanted the money out of the club, and that's when the shit hit the fan. And that's when I came in and I had to start selling everybody, okay. Unfortunately.
Stop swearing.
Second half.
Okay,
Eddie, can I just give you my little version of Mullers? Because obviously I had 2 years at the club when Cloughy had left and Peter Taylor had taken over. And quite rightly, like Kat was saying, obviously he's built the foundation for the team that Alan took over. But the one thing for me, this is just a personal thing with Peter, he wasn't a manager. It's like I said to Aid many times before, you know, that fantastic at doing what he did. Number two, the best pairing you'll ever get. Looking, you know, finding players, building a team, fantastic, but trying to coach them and motivate them, he just, for me, just couldn't do. You know, I was at Norwich with Ron Saunders. I don't really remember that guy's name.
And he won,
you know,
the European Cup.
Absolutely. You know, and he was a guy that signed me on professional forms. And so I'd had 3 years training under him. And obviously then John Bond came, slightly different, a little bit more football motivated. Ron was very, very sort of a fitness part, was a big part of how he sort of like set his team up. His view was obviously if you were fitted in the other team, you're going to last like 95 minutes. You're not going to be flagging after 75 minutes. And obviously it worked for him. John was a little bit more ball orientated, you know, in terms of play and stuff like that. But going back to Peter... You know, the problem with Peter for me was he never, ever came out on the training field. Seriously, you know, he had a couple of coaches that he'd signed. Brian Dakin, I don't remember, everybody remembers the name. You know, okay, his guys, but his football coaches for me just didn't do enough for me, didn't motivate me enough, didn't sort of like put me where I wanted to be in terms of like, you know, I want to get out on that pitch and play football. And so basically when Alan turned up, obviously the fact, like Chris has just said, you know, what he's achieved in football, you know, played for his country, played for Tottenham, captain's got, you know, that in itself was like a little bit of motivation itself. And for me personally, that's when I really sort of got up and running with Brighton Hove Albion Football Club. Mm. You know, I'd played a few games before, had a few little spells where I drifted in and out. But as soon as Alan come, then it was just like light at the end of the tunnel for me, guys. And it was the best 4 years of whatever it was when Alan was there of my career. And we all know what we achieved in that time. Mm. So
yeah. Rollo, you once described Muller as that you had to be in his company to understand just how influential he was.
Well, I think it's inspirational as well, isn't it? You know, I think that's the thing. You know, I mean, I always feel like, you know, in life, you've got to be in an environment that you enjoy to get the best out of you and get the best out of people. And as I said, for that 2 years with Peter, I found it difficult, you know. But as soon as Alan came, then yes, you know, again, because of who he was, you know, what he'd achieved, what he'd done in his life. And the fact that, I don't know, it's a bit, little bit like, maybe sounds a bit corny, guys, but, you know, when you've had a decent game, you've done well, and he comes and pats you on the back and said, Rollo, you've had a great game, like, you know, just makes you feel really, really great, like, you know. The only thing with just one little anecdote, I'll tell you. I mean, just Alan was like a lot of managers. Obviously, like Chris would have been motivational. It's always getting the best out of your team that you've got, you know. And I remember one game in particular we playing. I think it was the first season playing at home. It might have been the game where we ended up winning 7-0. It was 0-0 at half time. Walsall, was that it, Kat?
October 5th, 1976.
There we go, guys. So I love all the facts down here. And I remember Alan coming around the dressing room at half time, absolutely like laced into everybody, you know, like because obviously we weren't playing to the standard we should have been playing. And I just remember they had a little lad up front. I can't remember who it was, and he was giving me a bit of the runaround. And Mullers went round, and he had a little go at Teddy Maybank, and basically said like, you know. Ted, you call yourself a centre forward, you know, my God, you can't even trap a bag of cement. It was one of those type of things, you know what I mean? And then
he was right as well.
He was right, yeah. And then Ted, without using expletive, said, for God's sake, Al, he said, give it to me straight, will you? Don't beat about the bush. I was just going to finish it. And then he come round to me and he said, Rollo, he said, I'll tell you what. He said, you aren't half a deceptive runner. I said, oh, really? Thanks, boss. He said, yeah, you're slower than you look.
So Now, there was another game that season, well, more specifically three games that season, that went on in Albion history against a certain side from up the road in the FA Cup. Mm. What can you tell us about those games?
Kat, do you want to go first, mate? Go on.
It hurts
no,
us
there
now.
Was just
it
a lot of business.
Then.
There was a Vinceler and Swindlerist, and I remember Olden or something, all this. But it, before the game, it was a special game against the Palace. There's no question. There was a lot of bitterness there.
And Muller, well, rivalry hadn't really started.
You know, Muller and Muller was spitting teeth, and Venables was saying this. And I don't know really where it come from. I really don't, and it's unnecessary, really. But I like rivalry, but it was unnecessary. No, I like. Well, I like a few tackles going in, but this is it's got to extremes now, and we've got on top of the violence in football. We don't want to bring it back, do we?
When you look back, obviously, yeah. it was a third replay, wasn't it? And we'd drawn at home.
I got
drawn away.
Down in a penalty, and Nobby missed it. Remember?
Exactly. Yeah, I do remember. Yeah,
and I got a nosebleed, went over the halfway line, didn't I?
I remember the game at Stamford Bridge, you know, and obviously they went 1-0 up, and I think we had the penalty, and a lot of you guys were there, I'm sure you
Not
were on the day,
it,
yeah?
Can I
have a quick show of hands? Who was there that night at Stamford Bridge?
Me.
There's about... he wasn't. So it was about 10 of you, yeah.
I was four.
And you know, we all know exactly what... We all know exactly what happened. Obviously, we got given a penalty. Yeah. Nobby's placed it in the back of the net, got disallowed for encroachment, and in our point of view, we didn't have VAR then, anything like that. It was their players that were encroaching. So, obviously, at that moment, Muller's completely lost it, you know.
Who knew?
No, exactly, yeah. No. I can't believe that.
Such a mild character.
And obviously then was escorted from the pitch, wasn't he, to go up into the stands. And
not
I think,
the first time.
Not the first time. And on his way, I think, he obviously said a few things to the Palace supporters, which obviously that, apparently...
You're not worth
two bob, yeah. Which apparently started a rivalry today, so... That was,
well, here's some Mullers then for that.
Well, he holds his hands up for that one. Yeah,
because socially, culturally, intellectually, we are their superior. It's a fact.
This is true.
Not necessarily at football,
not tonight,
sadly.
Though.
Sorry? Okay, well, the 77-78 season, there was a bit of a near miss. Mullery said at the end of it, vowed to get us up the next season. So there was absolutely no pressure then, or was there?
No pressure. We were very calm. It was unlucky to miss out. I think
it was a stitch up, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. It was Spurs playing somebody. Or
Spurs and Southampton.
Spurs Southampton, wasn't it? At the Dell, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, we remember.
There we go, guys. Yeah.
You know, so the following season, we still had the same set of players and we're very, very confident. When you've got a player like Peter Ward in your side, you can go through games like Messi at Barcelona. There's certain player best at United. You get certain players at certain levels who change games. There's me and Rowley chugging around at the back. There's Nobby kicking and spitting and arguing with the referee. You got the picture of the game, haven't you? And it's going nowhere, this game. It's one each and it's going nowhere. And we're going to get a point. Then Peter Ward scored out of nothing. Absolutely out of nothing. We're only discussing coming in, weren't we, Andy?
Yeah.
Absolutely superb player, Peter Ward. And first 2 yard finishing. And we won 2-1 and a game was a draw written all over. And he used to do that all the time. If you got a player like him in the side, when the next season come, when we missed out, you thought, as long as he's here, we're going to go. We're going to make it. We're going to make it up there. And eventually we did. It was a lot to do with the goal-scoring ability. Not only that, the friendliness of the football club that was formed. We used to have Dinky on a Friday coming round out of a van with pork chops. Remember that role?
I do remember,
pork chops.
Yeah.
There was Fred selling the papers. There was that and the other.
He used to sell some T-shirts, didn't he, Cat, with your pictures on them.
Coffee,
remember,
didn't we? And we're all in it together, like an happy club. And then we had this little jack-in-the-box, Ward. This little rat. we had to control this rat. And he'd get his thing. And we used to drag him in. But what a player. Yeah.
But one player who was there during... both of your time there, and you actually did mention him, so let's hear about him now. Tell us about Sully.
Well, I mean, for me, you know, personally, I think Sully is the best midfield player I've ever played with. You know, I had some great... I played four games at Norwich. I had Graham Paddon, you know, people like that. And Graham, you know, bless him, was incredible. But Sully, I mean, I guess to actually train with him day in, day out, you know, and have the privilege to play with him. I mean, he was just exceptional. I mean, he played for his country, obviously played for Wales at that time, you know, which is a fantastic honour and obviously hell of an achievement, you know. And I remember myself and Fred Binney went up to Highbury. I think Wales somehow were playing Czechoslovakia up there in some sort of game. And, And Sully was just, he was the best player on the park. Seriously, he was that good, you know. But Sully is a person, Cat, so laid back, you know. My view is that he could have played at the top level all his career.
Well, he was released by Manchester United. Yeah. United released him, and he came here. And I was shocked when I came down here because I played in the Premiership for 10 years with whatever you want to call it.
First Division.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And I come down here and I was shocked. I've been playing left back and him in front of me. And I was, like I said earlier on, I had the fortune to play Tommy Hutchinson at Coventry. And Sully, like you say, Andy, was an exception. He had a personality defect, definitely. No, let me tell you, this is not a criticism, because he should have gone a lot higher in the game that he did.
Why didn't he?
He didn't believe in himself. You said about Alan Murray motivating you or whatever. Sully, even to this day, he's reticent to come to do's like this or go to the club or anything. He's shy. He's not sure of himself. He needed a special person behind him because he was a brilliant, brilliant footballer. Wonderful left foot. Lovely. I mean, in the dressing room, he was great, wasn't he? We used to have in the dressing room, but he didn't believe like he should have done and what tremendous ability he had.
I mean, he was as well, you know. I mean, obviously, part of obviously football is obviously you know your skill and everything you've got, but obviously fitness is another thing. And look, when back in the day, we used to run from on pre-season, we'd run from the Goldstone, like Kat said, up through the Cops, go down to Waterhall. We'd do all sorts of stuff.
Cool, Murray hated you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's when you were hoping Mike Bamber was going to drive by with his car and pick you up on the way back. But he wasn't here all the time, was he? But Sully, we do all the training, we do like a cross country, and the final bit of our pre-season, you all know the hill at Waterhall, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, where the house is on the right. Oh, well, we used to have to do sprints from the bottom to basically three quarters to almost the way at the top. After lunch, Kat, yeah. And you'd finish with six of those and then you had to run back to the ground. Well, I tell you what, seriously, how many lads, you know, you'd see Willow laying out on the grass, like, you know, like absolutely like sick as a dog. Everybody else, like, but Sully would be running up there saying, "Where are we going tonight, lads? where are we off?" Like, he was that naturally fit, which obviously helped him in being such a great player, is what he is, you know. But
he loved to be called Rivellino, didn't he?
Well, he was, wasn't he?
He looked like Rivellino.
He looked like Rivellino, played like him as well.
Ned
yeah.
Flanders.
Okay. Well, another crucial player in that promotion season was the captain. So, how good a captain was Brian Houghton?
Me?
Yeah,
I was a fantastic player at that level. He had a chip on his shoulder when he came from Port Vale because he thought he should have played at the ice level. That chip helped him because all the time he was angry. He saw me and Crossy Bealey and these all played at the ice level and he thought, I'm as good as them. He probably was. He's probably better. And that drove him on. He caused an argument in a cemetery. He would, honestly. He argued and this and that snarl on his face. That's why he looks like he does now.
What, 90?
Come here. Got a face like a smacked arse now. Have you seen him? What? No, but on a football... No, let's get back to him. On a football sense, brilliant. Brilliant leader. Never let anybody get away with anything. An absolute 100% winner. Yeah. And absolutely, absolutely spot on. Who signed him? Was it Taylor?
I'll tell you what,
mate, there you go again.
Yeah. Taylor another coup.
Magnificent signing.
I think as well, we've heard many times, obviously, Muller say the same thing. You know, obviously you have a manager, you know, who wants to then have somebody on the pitch who obviously thinks exactly like the manager does and he can convey whatever he wants to. And Nobby was exactly like, if you had Muller's here now, he'd say that, you know, he'd say Nobby was his captain, his manager.
Well, I think he said he was contemplating being a player manager because he was still only 34 when he came here. He's still our youngest ever manager.
No, he was knackered. No, I can't.
Well,
no.
All I can remember, Kat, is the first season he signed, is the stripes went that way. Then after the second season, they were just. You know what I mean, so maybe he was. Yeah. You're probably.
I think he said that as the story goes, that as soon as he saw Houghton, he thought, that's me on the pitch.
Oh yeah, it is definitely. Yeah. No question. He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant.
And as Kat said, you know, look, he wasn't frightened. He wasn't the biggest of guys, but he wasn't frightened to tell you if you weren't doing your job. You know, and that's what being a captain is all about. You know, he would probably literally pin people up against the wall. If you hadn't done it, he would tell you, and then you say, "We're not going to settle for that." You know,
the best one ever describes Brian Houghton is that we played Swindon away. It was absolute crap in the pouring rain. Absolutely shocking. Was 4-0 down. 4-0 down. Does anybody remember that? And Nobby was moaning and groaning at the referee. We can't play in these conditions. Bloody paddy field, this, that and the other. And after 65 minutes, he got him to call it off. We went there 3 weeks later and beat him 3-0, didn't we? And that's what you call a good captain.
You weren't in the team up until
I
really...
I wasn't off, no.
Until November 78, you were recalled in place of Ken Tyler. Now, there was a brilliant piece in the Argus where by the late, great John Vinnicum, and he described you as this. Professional pride is an expression often misused, frequently abused, and occasionally misconstrued. It is, however, a phrase that is deservedly applied to the attitude of certain players. In these days of commercialism, he was saying that back in 78... it is indeed pleasurable to see a seasoned professional who's been seen both success and disappointment and yet still has genuine enthusiasm for the game. As Brighton push on towards the First Division, experienced defender Chris Catlin plays with as much, if not more, enthusiasm than many more of his younger colleagues. His skill, enthusiasm, experience and quite obvious enjoyment is infectious.
Can I just say something before he talks because he'll be on for another hour? I tell you what, this guy, from the moment he came into the club, his passion and his enthusiasm and his love for the game and his will to win is the thing that just stood out, you know. And yet we can have a laugh and a joke with him, but I tell you what, guys, you know, this fella is a winner, and he's still the same now. Whatever he does in life, he is a winner. I'm going to tell you one story. We played Burnley away in a league game, and Leighton James was on the left wing. Remember him, the Welsh international,
yeah.
Right? So we're lining up. They're kicking off. So we've got the back four. Cat was right back. They're just about to kick off, and I'm looking, thinking, where's Cat gone? Where is he? So basically what had happened, guys, you know, like, obviously you got the halfway line, the centre circle. They go, Leighton James was out on the left. He is literally, you know, like you get the two boxers before a bout. Like in each other's face, he's up there, like just staring. And I'm thinking, what are you doing, Kat? You know what I mean? So
anyway, so just letting know we've turned up.
Exactly. Well, I remember. Didn't have time to talk to you during the first half, but I said to you at half time, I said, what the hell are you doing, Kat? I just said to him, like, basically, he said, see that stand? He said, if you try and get past me, you're going to end up in the fucking stand. So in a way, that was Kat's psychology of getting under people's skin, you know what I mean?
And face it, Leighton James was no shrinking violet, was he?
Oh, absolutely.
He was a nutter.
Yeah, but this fellow was even more of a nutter, so I think, and I know who won on the day.
Well, April the 28th, 1979, Blackburn Rovers came to the Goldstone. Now, Rollo, you needed help getting on the train at the game at Cardiff just 2 weeks before that. It was 1-0 at half-time, take over.
This is the Cardiff game?
No, this is Blackburn.
This is the Blackburn game. Well, yeah. We all remember, obviously, that we knew we had to get a result because, obviously, we were going to go to Newcastle. And, obviously, to be up with a chance of going up, we had to win the game. And, you know, fortunately, you know, I didn't score many goals that season, guys, but I don't know if you remember the goal that I scored. Hands up, who does?
Nope.
No, I'll tell you what. I'm struggling here, mate.
Didn't happen.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I could say...
It is on YouTube.
I could say anything. I could say anything.
Young audience.
I could
even
say...
Even Vinnicum didn't report it.
I'll tell you what.
I have got the match report, actually.
I flicked it up, put it on one shoulder, second shoulder.
Yeah.
Volleyed it in the right-hand corner from 35 yards. But no, it was nothing like that, guys, no.
It went in off your backside,
It went off my backside, yeah. No. It was. I remember the goal, the crosses coming from the left, and I didn't think I really had to jump. It was sort of like just in an area where I just thought, I'm going to get to it, and I just had to get my head behind it and put some enough sort of purchase on it to get it, obviously, as far away from the goalkeeper as I could get, which would have been the keeper's right-hand side. And fortunately, it just looped over the goalkeeper and went in the back of the net.
So when it went in, did you know what to do by way of a celebration? Because we've seen the likes of, I remember this, Marcus Painter with Dean and Uwe Hinnemeyer. They think, oh, my God, I've scored. What do I do now?
Yeah. Well, I was very much in that category because I didn't score too many. Yeah. So I was, you know, probably just maybe... There's a picture.
Rawley, answer the question, for God's sake. what did you do?
There's a picture. I just stood there, and I remember Teddy Maybank and the boys just jumping all over me. And I think I just stood there, put my hands up, just soaked it all up, and just thinking, you know, the best day of my life so far. Mm. And we had an even better one to come the next game anyway. Yeah, so,
Well, talking of that, because we're going to wrap up the hour, the first show in a minute, but we do have to talk about not the famous Newcastle game itself, and seeing as Mrs. Catlin isn't here tonight, the train journey home. Now, these two are starting to look at them. They're looking so sheepish now.
Is that the time?
tell us about this 12-hour train journey home.
I'll tell you what, it took a long time.
No, I tell you what, it's fantastic. The fans were on, the players was on, obviously. What a wonderful achievement to get in the Premiership or whatever you call it.
First division.
It's the same thing. It's a lot of tosh. Yeah. And for Brighton of Albion, you know, the seaside town, to get in the First Division was absolutely bloody marvellous. And I remember the game itself. I can remember every minute of the game. And then 17,000 Newcastle supporters after the game stayed behind to applaud us. That's proper supporters. Instead of going away because they got beaten, and we beat them well.
Can I just say that's because us doing what we did stopped Sunderland going up. That was principally it.
No, but they are great supporters. But other than getting absolutely wrecked on the way home and the supporters and all that, I always remember Jerry Ryan, very pensive. He was going like this. And I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "Simeon's waiting for me here with Zeith." And he says, I don't want to get off. He says, "I want to go into town." And the bloody train flew straight through here with Zeith. I saw Simeon going like this, and the train went straight. He says, Get in there. It bombed straight through. And she's like,
I'm not trying to be too serious after that, but that Seagull special was special, wasn't it?
You know what
I mean?
Absolutely brilliant.
It was, I mean, another one of Mike Bamber's fantastic, ideas, and the fact you had your own train to go up to, it was whatever game. We had the carriages at the front, the supporters had them behind. It was just amazing. And that Newcastle trip, as you say, was just... And the fact that, you know, on the day, you know, emotions were so high, you had the chance to go back and say thank you to all you guys.
Yeah, and the next morning at the Goldstone as well.
Yeah,
we all went to the Goldstone the next day. And
how was your head?
Oh, it was out of it. But but the thing is, with Brighton
Albion,
the fans have been fantastic throughout the role. Yeah. I'm not just saying this to give you a G tonight, but fans here, I used to watch at Coventry and I thought, hang on, they're playing Shrewsbury at home tomorrow. And they picked the paper on a Sunday morning. No, it wasn't 100 miles in them days. 35,000. To watch Brighton play Shrewsbury. When I made my debut with Graham Cross, we played Mansfield. There were 36,000 there. Watched Mansfield. Phenomenal support. Absolutely. Sussex support the cricket club, the football club. Absolutely magnificent. Credit to all the sporting fraternity in Sussex.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And it makes a lot of difference for the Sussex cricket players and certainly the professional footballers when me and Andy played them years ago. It makes such a difference to see that mass... Remember the old chicken run at the Goldstone?
Mm.
How good was that? You come out to see what boots she was wearing, and it was just a mass of people, that chicken run, wasn't it? And it just inspires you. It lifts you. You know, you're 1-0 up right away, aren't you, Rob?
Absolutely, Kat. Look, I just want to say one thing, and it's not the end, but I tell you what, guys, it's been the most amazing journey for me, you know, from when I started as a kid, going through my football career and finishing. I'm sure Kat will say the same, but all I can say, guys, it wouldn't have been the same, or it wouldn't have been half as much fun without you guys being behind us and watching us. So thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
And with that, would you please thank Chris Catlin and Andy Rollings?
I've got a very dodgy picture here, Dad.
Have you?
I was actually looking like Tom Jones.
Well, yeah. I know the one you mean,
John Ruggiero. Remember John Ruggiero? Doris. Blue.
Hoskin.
He's looking at the